cost much.
Welcome back. Our next case, United States versus X. Cole Gonzalez and Captain Carmen. Well, this is a TJAG certified case, therefore the government will argue first. So, Captain Carmen, are you prepared to argue on behalf of the government?
Yes, sir.
And Lieutenant Kane Cruz, are you prepared to argue on behalf of Appellee?
Yes, sir.
Very well, then, please proceed.
Good morning, Chief Judge Olson, members of the court, and may it please the court. I am Captain Jacob Carmen, and along with Colonel Ian Pedden, I represent the United States. I request 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Grant.
In response to a NCMEC tip alerting NCIS that Appellee had uploaded images of child pornography to his Snapchat account, NCIS approached the properly empowered commander.
Captain Carmen, can you move a little closer to the
microphone?
Yeah, there you go.
Yes, Your Honor. Can you
hear
me now?
Yeah, that's much better.
Yeah, some of us were, are more debilitated than others, you know.
Thank you, Your Honor. NCIS approached the properly empowered commander with a detailed 11-page affidavit. The agent made his declaration of probable cause sworn orally. He did so in the presence of the commander, who signed not just the affidavit, but the attachment and the CAS itself. In reliance on that CAS, law enforcement discovered exactly the type of material they requested to seize and that they were authorized to pursue, evidence that Appellee had received, viewed, possessed, and distributed child pornography. As such, the CAS here was not the sort of free-for-all general search the Fourth Amendment prohibits, and thus this court should overturn the military judge for the following four reasons. First, the CAS was sufficiently particular. Second, any deficiencies in the CAS were cured by the incorporated affidavit. Third, the agents relied on the CAS in good faith. And fourth, the exclusionary rule was improperly applied.
Unfortunately, these types of
cases are quite common. So in these situations where there's probable cause to believe that service member is in possession of child pornography, is the government advocating for a broad rule that in all instances then all electronic devices are subject to search and all places within those electronic devices are subject to search? Or is there something factually different or perhaps even unique about this case that you're pointing to?
Your Honor, as this Court said in Richards, the touchstone here is reasonableness. And so the rule is not that any time child pornography is discovered pursuant to a NCMEC hit, the government can seize all devices and go anywhere on those devices. But here, because the NCMEC hit indicated that Appellee had uploaded his the child pornography to a messaging app, there was probable cause to believe that images could be anywhere on that phone. That is to say, they originated on the phone and were sent elsewhere. And so the government was properly empowered to search any place where images could be stored on those digital devices, but also any place they could be sent from.
So is that the key aspect of this case, which, again, is really not unusual? NCMEC says indication that uploading, that in all instances, then, all electronic devices of the service member can be searched in all areas of all those electronic devices?
Your Honor, this is the question the CCA was wrestling with, and I think, like in Burgess, it's important to read the scope of the search in relation to the offense that's specified in the CAS itself. In Burgess there, the warrant authorized search for images, particularly of drug paraphernalia. And here, where we're looking for evidence of child pornography distribution in particular, an electronic device that is capable of receiving, sending, or storing child pornography is very critical. And the agent said we wouldn't have seized a digital alarm clock, for example, because that's not a device of that type.
Counsel, you touched on it. Assuming, and I'm just assuming arguendo, that the CAS, we determine the CAS on its face is deficient. What about the incorporation? And thank you for reordering the issues so that we get to the incorporation question second. So talked about incorporation, how you just pointed to the sufficiency of the affidavit. How was that affidavit incorporated into the CAS, particularly with particularity?
Your Honor, that's because not only did the commander consider both documents simultaneously, which is one prong of the Groh versus Ramirez test, but also was sworn orally before that commander, and he signed not just the affidavit, but the final page of the attachment to the affidavit, as well as the CAS on, concurrently. That swearing was oral, and I think that's a critical fact to consider. Even if incorporation wasn't clearly done, or if this court finds that incorporation wasn't sufficient here, it doesn't stop this court from considering the content of the affidavit in construing maybe two reasonable interpretations of the CAS itself.
I'm sorry, before you get into those two reasons, could you help me understand one of the factual items here? Didn't the investigator who was swearing the affidavit, briefing the commander, didn't he take the affidavit with him didn't he take the authorization with him with the affidavit attached to it and then go do the search? Is that factually what happened?
Yes, Your Honor. He used a similar, as a military judge, similar but not completely the same list directing the digital analyst to search the contents of the phone. And in doing so, the military judge held that that specific list was an indicator that the CAS was in particular. And the military judge did so applying the Riccardi rule, which this court quoted but did not adopt as a standard, to determine that because the government could have been more specific, it was constitutionally required to for that warrant to be
filed. I didn't mean to interrupt your thought. Please proceed with your previous thought.
I'll interrupt it. following up on the Chief's question, is there any, when we're looking for images, right, and images can be attached to emails, they can be sent through messaging apps, they could be in folders, and we have evidence that says they can be mislabeled. Is there any limiting principle on where the government can and can't go if what they're looking for are images on a digital device? Should it be limited by file size? Like, would that make – I think the concern that – is this – once you're looking for images, is that authorization for – because of the type of things that they are and the places they can be stored, is that authorization for the government to read all the emails, read all the text messages, everything? Is there anywhere they can't go, or is there some limiting principle about what they can and can't look at on a service member's phone?
Well, I'm hesitant to say in all cases looking at every record is appropriate, Your Honor, but here and like even in Richards, that is likely the only solution. And a number of federal courts have wrestled with that question and determined that that may be the only solution. For example, the Ninth Circuit, which adheres much more closely to the Riccardi rule, has said that not only can file types be mislabeled or hidden, but they can also be even disguised as different extensions. For example, a JPEG versus a PDF versus an Excel file. And so even the Ninth Circuit has wrestled with this and said that may be the only practical solution. And to turn back to this court's decision in Richards, that's how we know that the Richards court did not adopt the Riccardi rule, because there was a temporal limitation to the probable cause in that search. There, the victims alleged that they'd been abused from 1993 to 1997, but that was not on the face of the warrant, and it wasn't used in the search methodology. And this court found that that was not fatal to the particularity of that warrant in that case. And so the existence of a further ability of the government to limit the search isn't necessarily fatal to an affidavit or to a CAS. And the Richards holding, which is simply that law enforcement was authorized to search the appellant's digital devices for evidence of the specific federal crime that was alleged in the CAS, is adopted by the majority of federal circuits. The First Circuit, the Second Circuit, and even the Sixth Circuit, which is a closer analog to the Riccardi rule, still use the rule that as long as a warrant supplies enough information to guide and control the executing agent's judgment, and as long as it isn't too broad, that it includes items that should not be seized, that warrant is valid. It's also important to distinguish, Your Honors, between the particularity of a search and the scope. For example, the Tenth Circuit in Burgess made this distinction in describing that just because a search is broad doesn't mean that it's unconstitutionally in particular. That is to say, the particularity goes to whether or not the type of evidence has been specified, and the breadth is the scope of what that search can validly encompass. And to Your Honor's question about images, the breadth there is entirely dependent on the probable cause and the crime alleged, and the way that criminals tend to conceal the evidence of those crimes. Even if this court were not to find, or were to find that this CAS was facially deficient and lacked sufficient indicia of incorporation, the agents here acted reasonably and in good faith. There was no evidence that on the face of the warrant a reasonable officer should have known that the CAS was invalid. It wasn't, as the Second Circuit said in Purcell, so glaringly deficient that no reasonable officer could presume it to be valid. And in that case, the crime at issue, there was no reference to the alleged crimes or the temporal scope at all. And here we at least had a limiting factor of the appellant's digital devices and the specific federal crimes. And a reasonable officer might look at that and be validly or validly convinced that that was a reasonable warrant.
Counsel, does it – so in the civilian world, we usually the good faith exception applies to – you think about what law enforcement did, right? Did they lie to the magistrate? Did they follow the warrant? But in the military world, we have this odd situation, or at least different situation, where a commander who is both the head of law enforcement and able to issue search authorizations like a magistrate can issue a search authorization. So should we consider, because the CCA seemed to be concerned with what the commander did in his issuing of the search authorization, not so much what the law enforcement officers did with it. Should we be concerned in our good faith analysis about what the commander did in issuing the search authorization, or is that really more part of the probable cause? Like, was there probable cause to issue it or not? Or is it fair, because of his dual role, to consider the commander's actions in when we do our good faith analysis?
Your Honor, my read of Leon is that the good faith exception and the exclusionary rule are aimed at the behavior of law enforcement and not magistrates. And so for that reason, I think it's the behavior of law enforcement. And the reason why I say that is because the exclusionary rule is meant to deter law enforcement misconduct, not necessarily magistrate misconduct. And so my read of the Supreme Court case law following Leon is simply that we care what law enforcement did and whether they misrepresented or whether they should have known. For example, this is not a case like Groh, where the warrant is invalid on its face and glaringly so because it doesn't name a type of evidence to be seized. And we had, obviously, specific federal crimes named, as in Richards. And so focusing on law enforcement misconduct is the proper, or at least the way the Supreme Court has treated the exclusionary rule and the good faith exception.
Kevin Klum, in answering Judge Hardy's question, I mean, you're not excluding the possibility that the commander or the search authority could still be just rubber stamping what he or she is given by the investigators, right?
No, Your Honor. That's certainly a
problem. I mean, that's a possibility.
It is, Your Honor, but it's focused on whether or not the law enforcement agents knew that it was being rubber stamped. In effect, if the special agent walked in and this was pencil whipped and just cursorily not examined, that would be an indicator that the law enforcement should know it's not valid because it wasn't properly considered. Mm-hmm. Rubber stamping was not raised at trial. And so under this Court's Perkins decision, that was waived. But even if this Court decides that it wasn't waived, in Perkins, The magistrate had abandoned his neutral role completely. There was no indicia of probable cause whatsoever. And here
is that a greater concern in the military, where the commander is not a judicial officer, than in the civilian world, where you have a magistrate usually who is at least a judicial officer? Or has that question already been settled in years gone by regarding commanders authorizing a search?
Your Honor, so long as they're not abandoning that neutral role as a magistrate analog, and so long as they're not rubber stamping, I think that question's been settled.
So, counsel, because I just want to make sure that for with Judge Hardy and Sparks, so essentially what you're saying is that any concern or our review of the search authorizers slash commanders role would come under the probable cause prong, not the particularity or the exclusionary, good faith exclusionary rule. I think that's what you're saying. I just want to make sure.
I think if there were no probable cause, the exclusionary rule could certainly still apply. But barring that situation, it would have to be law enforcement knowledge of the magistrate's abandonment of his role.
Okay.
And this rolls straight into our exclusionary rule argument here, which is that because law enforcement did what it is that they were supposed to do, which is approach the correct commander with a detailed affidavit describing their probable cause and get that signed in person, and then search for exactly the type of evidence that they asked to search for and were empowered to search for, there's no conduct here with which to deter via the exclusionary rule. The costs of the military justice system, as military judge himself found, are extremely high. We're talking about in excess of 500 videos and images of child pornography, not to mention the messages distributing the child pornography. But the military judge erred in not applying or in applying the exclusionary rule because the conduct here that he sought to deter was not illegal conduct, at least under the majority rule and this court's decision in Richards. And seeing that I'm low on time, this court should overturn the military judge's decision.
Any questions? Thank you, Captain Carman.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Lieutenant Kane Cruz.
Good morning, Chief Judge Olson, members of the court, and may it please the court. I am Lieutenant Maggie Kane Cruz, and I represent appellee Corporal Exgol Gonzalez. Agent Lawrence knew the specific evidence he was looking for and where he would expect to find it. But he asked for and received authorization to search anywhere within appellee's digital devices for any evidence of child pornography. Viewing the evidence in light most favorable to appellee, this court should affirm the military judge's ruling for two reasons. First, his finding that the CAS was facially deficient was reasonable. And second, he applied the exclusionary rule appropriately.
Lieutenant Kane Cruz, when you say he knew where to expect to find it, but does that preclude him from searching elsewhere?
Your Honor, as elsewhere would be still general. Here, Agent Lawrence had probable cause to search appellee's Snapchat application for pictures and videos of child pornography. At Joint Appendix 397, the military judge found the CAS was facially deficient due to its failure to describe the data, the Snapchat application, and the evidence to search the pictures and videos. And that is a reasonable application of the law because the Fourth Amendment requires the warrant itself to particularly describe the places to search and things to be seized. It does not apply to the affidavit.
Haven't many courts said that if you specify the crime that you're looking for evidence of a violation of this act, that that's particular enough?
Your Honor, referencing the statute when it comes to a digital device, a cell phone, is not sufficient. In Stanford versus Texas, the Supreme Court state had a warrant that merely referenced a state statute and struck that warrant down as unconstitutional, even though it referenced the statute. And they struck it down because just listing the statute is an indiscriminate sweep of the search. It's too broad. And here, applying the Richards decision, the military judge identified that when reviewing the cases, it hinges on reasonableness. So maybe there could be a circumstance where referencing the statute is enough, Your Honor, but in this case it was not.
Counsel, on that point, can you explain your client's position on why Richards is distinguishable from this case? I mean, the language was somewhat similar in Richards, the language of the CAS.
Your Honor, the CAS is distinguishable. The rule of law applies.
I understand that. I'm just saying the outcome.
Yes, Your Honor. But the CAS in Richards was specific. It identified the statute. It identified the person to which to search for, the communications with, and mentioning the communications, it actually listed search the communications. That is particular. The issue for Richards was regarding the scope of the search and because it failed to identify the timeline. But this court in Richards made clear the timeline wasn't necessary because the CAS itself was specific. Here, the CAS just listed search appellee's digital devices for evidence of child pornography, and not just evidence of possessing or viewing, also evidence of distributing. And that,
so from your perspective, with this fact pattern, what should that CAS have actually stated?
The CAS should have stated, to comply with the particularity requirement, search appellee's digital devices, that specifically cell phone, for evidence of child pornography, pictures and videos pertaining to child pornography with an appellee's Snapchat application.
So let's break that down a little bit. Why just the cell phone?
Your Honor, in my answer, I mentioned digital devices. The military judge found using the term digital devices was sufficient because at the time, law enforcement didn't know which digital device. So based on the record, it was reasonable for law enforcement to state digital devices.
So then the second part of your answer had to deal with just Snapchat. Why just Snapchat when we're talking about someone uploading child pornography, as has been noted during the questioning of government's counsel? There's precedent out there talking about how child pornography can be in many different applications and texts and emails and social media and so forth can be mislabeled. So why just Snapchat?
Yes, Your Honor. And based on the record before this court, at Joint Appendix 243 to 46 in Agent Lawrence's affidavit, he outlines his background regarding Snapchat. He identifies 13 paragraphs specifically regarding Snapchat as the statement in his statement for probable cause and the NCMEC report regarding the Snapchat. So here, Agent Lawrence had probable cause for Snapchat, based on Snapchat. That was his scope of the search. And he knew, he had this information at his fingertips that he had probable cause for the pictures and the videos. This isn't a case where he was unaware or couldn't appreciate where the evidence could be. And turning to your other question about files being mislabeled, so with In this Court's decision in Richards, this Court cited the Third Circuit's decision in Stabile, which stated the digital search could open different folders and file names because this evidence could be mislabeled. However, the key is probable cause. In Stabile, to quote, they state, the Third Circuit stated, quote, a digital search may be extensive as reasonably required to locate the items described in the warrant based on probable cause. Here, Agent Lawrence had probable cause to search Snapchat. He detailed that in his affidavit, made no reference to Telegram, which is the application where the majority of the evidence was found. And he made no reference for Snapchat being linked with other applications on a iPhone. And that's based off of the agent's training and experience alone.
So how does that tie into reasonableness? I think you would agree that that's really the standard that we're looking at, is reasonableness. Once you've got probable cause to believe it's on Snapchat, why is there then a barrier when it's, the question is whether it's reasonable to expect or suspect that there might be child porn elsewhere?
Your Honor, it could be reasonable if the facts of the case was supported by that. Here,
I'm sorry, I didn't catch what you just said.
Sorry, Your Honor. There could be a case where it's reasonable to open up other applications. But here, the record before this Court, Agent Lawrence did not have the training and experience that would have led him to be able to open other applications. When he testified at trial, where it was the government's burden, he did not provide any further explanation outside of his warrant, or outside of the affidavit, that explained that he could have opened other applications. The government never even asked him to explain his training and experience regarding Snapchat. And at Joint Appendix 250, I believe, when asked about the CAS, all he said was he provided the CAS to the commander to search Apelli's barracks for his digital devices. And that's not even an accurate representation of the CAS. So moving on to the incorporation.
So if they were to go in and find child porn in Snapchat, would they then have the basis to go back to commander or to a magistrate and get a broader search authorization?
If the facts of the case supported that, yes, Your Honor, and that's exactly.
But what would the facts need to be? I'm just talking about specifically they go into Snapchat, and in fact they find child porn in Snapchat. Is there a basis then for the government to go look for authorization to search beyond Snapchat?
Based on the affidavit, Agent Lawrence requested a search of other applications that could hold videos and pictures. If that was provided to the analyst, he could have possibly searched other applications and videos based off of that. But if while the search was underway, Agent Lawrence received information that there were other applications that Apelli was using, maybe there was another response or an additional response to the NCMEC report, then certainly the execution of the search is fluid. As this Court saw in Richards and in other cases, there's a constant stop and go where the analyst conducting the search might see something in plain view outside of the scope, where they'll pause, talk to the agent, and then the agent can request further authorization. And that did not happen here. But it could, if, as the evidence develops. So turning to the incorporation issue, the government stated that for incorporation to apply, the commander considers the documents and signs the documents. That's not what the Supreme Court stated in Groh. The Supreme Court made clear in Groh that the incorporation test is twofold. There has to first be proper words in the proper place on the warrant, and the affidavit accompanies the warrant. Here, the CAS made no reference to the affidavit.
That's not accurate.
Yes, Your Honor.
I'll read it to us so we'll know. Affidavits having been made before me by Special Agent Darrell Lawrence. And then at the bottom, when they issue it, he says, for issuance of command, authorized search exists as stated in the supporting affidavit. What more needs to be said?
Yes, Your Honor. I wanted to say the affidavit was not referenced in the section it was required to be referenced in. The paragraph that you mentioned is the probable cause statement. The probable cause statement does not incorporate the affidavit by reference. The probable cause statement merely provides that there was probable cause to search. But that probable cause statement does not outline the scope of the search. What outlines the scope of the search are the paragraphs above, where particularity is required for the property to be seized and the places to be searched. And on page 15 of my brief, I provide an image identifying the places where particularity is required.
So it's incorporated for some reasons, but not for others?
Your Honor, the probable cause statement does not incorporate. It just states that probable cause is satisfied. And the Supreme Court in Groh specifically rejected that argument that the probable cause statement was enough to incorporate by reference. And that's also seen in the Fourth Circuit's decision in Ray. That should be persuasive to this court. In Ray, the court had a Navy CAS, and the United States and the court agreed that the boilerplate reference to probable cause is insufficient to incorporate the affidavit by reference. And this is key because this is a basic of an understanding of what these documents mean and the purposes that they serve. The affidavit does not define the scope. It's a request. It's a request that does not have to be approved. A magistrate in the civilian world or a commander in the military does not need to authorize the search. They have to be impartial. The warrant is what outlines the scope and the details for the search, and that's why particularity is required. And if law enforcement does not want to provide that particularity, then they have to follow the incorporation rules in order for the affidavit to save the CAS. And here, Agent Lawrence had the particularity at his fingertips. He could have easily provided that in the CAS or properly incorporated it by reference. And the fact that
so, counsel, how? Oh, one, and thank you. I'm looking at your chart from your that the little red box were incredibly helpful. But so, how would an agent or law enforcement, under your argument, specifically incorporated in the particularity sections?
Yes, Your Honor. So, if they were not to provide the specific language, pardon me, they would write. For example, that first area, there is reason to believe that on the premises known as digital devices, see also attached affidavit dated August 23rd, 2023. And below, they would provide similar language. There's now being concealed evidence of Article 134 and also, as also detailed in attached affidavit dated the date, paragraph 33, for example. That's proper incorporation. And that's proper incorporation because those are the sections that are identifying the place to search and the things to be seized. And that affidavit would also be attached to the actual CAS and provided to appellee. Here, the record does not support that the affidavit was actually attached to the CAS and provided to appellee. And that's a requirement from GROW, GROW's incorporation test, because the affidavit and the CAS needs to be provided to the accused to provide the lawfulness of the search, the scope in the search, and what the law enforcement was intending to seize. So I'd like to turn to the good faith exception.
Well, let me ask you on that factual point. I thought, and correct me if I'm wrong, I thought the agent simply said, look, I usually do provide this to the military member being searched. I just can't remember here in this case specifically.
Yes, Your Honor.
So you're taking that to, and I think the military judge took that to say, there's no evidence that the affidavit was provided or the search authorization was provided to the accused in this case. Is that right?
Yes, Your Honor. When in that line of questioning, it was pertaining specifically to the CAS. Did you provide the CAS to the accused? Agent Lawrence said he does not remember, but he usually does. Key here is the absence of discussion about the affidavit. So turning to the good faith exception, the key here is that Agent Lawrence drafted the warrant. He provided it to the commander to sign. He knew what he was limited to search for, but asked to search everywhere and for anything. That is not good faith.
Why can't he ask?
Why can't
he ask? He's a law enforcement officer trying to put the bad guys in prison. Why can't he ask the commander or the magistrate, this is what I want to search? It's not on him, right? He's not trained in probable cause. Why can't he ask for whatever he wants to ask for? Isn't the burden on the commander or the magistrate to say, well, easy, right?
Yeah.
There is or there isn't probable cause, but that doesn't turn on how broad the ask is from the law enforcement officer.
Yes, Your Honor, the probable cause does determine the scope, but here Agent Lawrence had the training and experience. He has been in law enforcement for
over 10 years. Why is it bad faith for him to ask for more than he's entitled to under the law?
Because he used probable cause for a limited search to justify a general search. He then and I see I'm running.
So every time an eager law enforcement officer asks for more than he's entitled to under probable cause, that eliminates good faith?
I see I'm almost out of time. My answer.
Please respond, Judge Hardy.
Your Honor, not every time they ask for what is supported by probable cause. Here, based on the record before us, Agent Lawrence knew where he could find the evidence to seize and what that evidence was.
And he suspected he could find it in some other places, too. Right? So he went to the commander and said, this is where I'd like to search. Right? What's wrong with asking?
Specifically Snapchat, Your Honor. And here, he used that limited probable cause for Snapchat to justify a general search.
Counsel, doesn't that go back to the Chief Judge's question that when we're talking about pictures and images and we know that they must be uploaded from somewhere, and so that would support I need to look in other applications or files because these photos came from somewhere in order for them to be uploaded. So going back to Judge Hardy's question, to me that seems to make good sense that pictures come from somewhere to be uploaded. We need to look at these other places. So
yes.
Why is that all of a sudden transform it into a general search?
Yes, Your Honor, because Agent Lawrence knew the somewhere, and he knew the somehow. He knew Snapchat.
He knew the photos had been uploaded into Snapchat. That's what the NIMIC report says. But the photos came from somewhere. I mean, so you have to figure out where are the photos coming from that you can upload into or download, the case may be, from Snapchat.
And here, Your Honor,
Please respond.
Here, Your Honor, the somewhere is clear. They came from Eppley's cell phone. At the time, Agent Lawrence knew it was in his cell phone, uploaded to Snapchat, which is why we would concede that the photo application on Eppley's iPhone could have been searched. But here, the digital analyst was never provided that those particular details, that the NCMEC report came from Snapchat. Agent Lawrence provided the analyst not with the CAS, not with the affidavit. He provided the analyst with his own informal instructions on how to search. And there he said to search for identify items pertaining to Snapchat. In the DC3 report specifically identified Telegram as the application that was searched. The analyst didn't even search Snapchat. He searched Telegram. And when it was the government's burden, the government did not call the analyst to testify at trial. They did not ask the Agent Lawrence about the search, about his request. Based off of the facts of the record, the military judge reasonably applied the law to the facts that are supported here.
So, counsel, going back again to Chief Judge's question, because the statement you just made about the methodology that the analysts use, you know, in U.S. v. Shields, we said that not using the optimal method of a search does not render that search unreasonable. And so if the analyst is given a list, in this case from the special agent, that I'm looking for or you should look for these things, and the analyst decides, okay, I think the best way I can find these things is by searching these apps or these files, how does that make it unreasonable in light of Shields? How do we square your position with what the court has already said in Shields?
Yes, Your Honor, it does square with Shields. In Shields, it did not involve the exclusionary rule. It was about the search methodology for a CAS that was particular. The issue wasn't about particularity. The government called the analyst, and the analyst explained how he conducted the search based on the probable cause, sorting by file size rather than file dates. Here, this court can square Shields with what happened here by showing a major departure from Shields in terms of the methodology used. For one, the government didn't even call the analyst to testify about the search. The record doesn't support any details. This court is...
But, counsel, that goes to whether government met its burden. But to the extent of the actual conduct of the search, because we're in the good faith analysis at this point. So the actual conduct of the search, you're challenging and saying that good faith does not apply here because the analyst didn't search Snapchat looking for pictures and videos of child pornography. The analyst searched other things. And so that's why I'm struggling. I'll use Judge Sparks. I'm struggling with trying to, how do we reconcile, because to me that's methodology then, and we have said in Shields, you know, the best method does not, you not using the best method or the most expeditious method doesn't render that search unreasonable.
Your Honor, the challenge on the CAS is not regarding the methodology of the search. It's regarding whether the CAS violated the Fourth Amendment for not being particular. So it's the particularity issue here.
In good faith, you're looking at whether law enforcement could rely on the CAS and the affidavit to conduct a search.
Yes, Your Honor.
I guess we're going back to your original argument that the CAS was obviously facially deficient, and so therefore there is no way that a law enforcement officer could reasonably have relied on it.
Your Honor, for the good faith exception, and pertaining to MRE 311C3C, the official seeking and executing the authorization relied on good faith that it was issued properly.
Mm-hmm.
So that's our contention. Agent Lawrence cannot be seen to relied on good faith that the CAS was issued properly because he drafted the invalid CAS. In Grow, the Supreme Court stated the agent cannot be found to have relied on in good faith when they draft the invalid warrant themselves.
Okay, what about the analysts? We've been talking about the analysts and how they conducted the search.
And, Your Honor, the record does not support how the analyst conducted his search, which factors into mainly the exclusionary rule and the good faith exception. I know I've said it before, but it was the government's burden to meet this threshold. They failed to call the analyst. This court should not give the benefit to the government to develop those facts that are not supported by the record. Here, it's very clear in the DC-3 report that the analyst searched Telegram, and they identified one video that was perceived to have been similar to Snapchat. But it's not, there's no good faith there. The record doesn't support that the agent Lawrence conducted the search in reliance that the CAS was issued appropriately.
Any further questions?
May Judge Hart, Chief?
Yes.
Counsel, did the military judge misstate the law when he said warrants must use as much specificity as the government's knowledge and circumstance allow and are conclusively invalidated by their substantial failure to specify as nearly as possible?
No, Your Honor. That is...
Has this court ever said that?
Pardon me. That's a reasonable application of this court's decision in Richards.
Is it?
Yes,
is that what we said in Richards? Is that the standard we set in Richards?
At Richards, at 369, this court stated the proper metric of sufficient specificity is whether it was reasonable to provide a more specific description at that juncture of the investigation.
They sound really different to me, what I read and what you read.
Your Honor, you may disagree, but in the posture of this case, Article 62, where this court views the evidence in light most favorable.
Is that evidence or is that law?
It is a conclusion of law. However, applying that to the evidence and the facts of this case.
Well, I mean, the standard is the law, right?
Yes, Your
and
Honor.
And we do that de novo.
And that's reviewed de novo. Yes, right. Your Honor.
And has this court ever said that sentence that I said?
Your Honor, I'm not prepared to answer that question.
Let's just assume we haven't. Has the Supreme Court ever said that?
That exact
that or express that sentiment.
I do not want to.
Okay,
ask
so
you
who
to read
who,
it again.
Who do we know did say that?
So, it's a reasonable application of Richards. Here, the judge quoted Richards.
Okay, but who has expressed that sentiment?
The military judge.
Well, yes, and who was he quoting?
I'm sorry.
Who was he quoting?
I believe you mentioned Richards.
Well, he was quoting he's quoting the Tenth Circuit, right?
The Tenth Circuit, okay.
Right.
So
is the Tenth Circuit's view on what's reasonable and not reasonable binding on this court?
It is persuasive, Your Honor.
Okay.
But not binding on this court.
What if we're not persuaded? What if we're not persuaded?
the standard for clearly erroneous, even though this court does make de novo decisions based on the law. However, that's not something I would invite this court to hang its hat on. There may be disagreement on what law was used, but here, this court may disagree, but it doesn't mean the military judge's ruling should be overturned.
If we think the military judge might have applied the wrong standard, that wouldn't be a basis for overturning the military judge's ruling?
And Your Honor, and I'm sorry, I didn't remember right away, but that Tenth Circuit case was just one of many cases the military judge cited. He cited this court's decision in Richards, numerous other circuits. He didn't hang his hat on the Tenth Circuit, Riccardi. What he did in that 17-page ruling was provide all of these cases. He identified reasonableness is the key. He did not solve the case in a vacuum based on the Tenth Circuit. So if this court finds that he might have, he did not need to cite the Tenth Circuit, and I believe it's Peoples versus Carson, then that's fine. But he did cite the Supreme Court in Groh, the Fourth Amendment, and Richards, all of which are binding on the military judge's ruling.
Any further questions? Seeing none, you may briefly conclude.
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you. For these reasons, appellee respectfully requests this court affirm the military judge's ruling and find no abuse of discretion. Thank you.
Thank you. Now, Captain Carman, I don't believe you reserved time. You asked the court to reserve time. Did you intend to?
I do believe I was.
Okay. Please proceed. Please proceed.
If this court established a requirement that CAS or CAS in general were meant to have app-specific limitations on where it is that they could go, that would be a demand for the precise ex-ante restrictions that this court said in Richards were not required to pass the particularity question. And that tracks a majority of federal circuits. For example, Christie, which is from the same circuit, the Tenth Circuit, that Riccardi is from, which is where the military judge gets this as much specificity as the government's knowledge and circumstances allow, Christie and Burgess have both walked that decision back. In Christie, for example, agents were entitled to utilize a warrant that just authorized the search of a computer for all records and information relating to the murder, neglect, and abuse of a child. There was no specific limitation as to, and it included, that they could go into diaries, calendars, or anything that could show the day-to-day activities of the defendant in that case. And that was upheld by the Tenth Circuit. And so this language that the military judge was ruling, was relying on, not only has been walked back by the circuit that issued that language, but it was not adopted by this court in Richards, which, again, where the government had the knowledge of that temporal limitation and their failure to include it in the scope of the CAS or in the methodology of the search was not fatal. And likewise, this tracks even the Sixth Circuit in Richards, which also quotes a version of the Riccardi rule. And there, law enforcement were allowed to rely on a warrant that allowed the search of an entire server, even though they had a way of limiting the search of that server to specific web addresses. And what they did find was distribution of child pornography on other websites located on that server. And that that evidence was also upheld. It was not suppressed.
Counsel, before we run out, could you address the appellee's argument with regards to the incorporation of the affidavit or lack thereof, and that it doesn't fit within the appropriate scope boxes, that the only reference to supporting affidavits is in the probable cause paragraph and is not addressed in the two scope boxes of the places and the property to be seized, and so therefore it is not incorporated for particularity purposes?
Our response there, Your Honor, is just that's not what Groh versus Ramirez established as the two-part test. It's merely that the affidavit accompanies the warrant and that sufficient language of incorporation is on the face of the CAS in this case. And here there was language, affidavits having been made before me, but there was also reference on the front page of the affidavit to the attachment itself. And the United States is not aware of a case where that has to be in the correct block on the form in order to be sufficiently incorporated.
Let me see if there are any further questions from my colleagues. You may briefly conclude.
Thank you, Your Honor. This court should overturn the military judge's ruling. Thank you.
The case is now submitted. The court thanks counsel for both sides, and the court will stand adjourned until 9:30 tomorrow morning.
Court is adjourned until 9:30 tomorrow morning.